Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
The sunny side of sports begins on a somber note this evening. At least 76 people were killed when a plane carrying members of the rising Brazilian football club Chapecoense Real crashed Monday night outside of Medellin, Colombia. Colombian police commander Brigadier General Jose Gerardo Acevedo said five of the 81 people aboard the chartered plane survived. Rescue efforts were hindered by difficulty reaching the crash site and low visibility. Chapecoense, based in southern Brazil, was traveling to Colombia for the finals of the Copa Sudamericana against Atlético Nacional of Medellín. The first match in the home and away series was scheduled for Wednesday. Brazilian President Michel Temer said authorities are mobilizing to help the team and families of the victims. Temer said the government will do everything possible to alleviate the pain of the family members of the players and the journalists who died in the crash. The head of Colombia's Civil Aviation Agency, Alfredo Bocanegra, said authorities cannot rule out the possibility the plane ran out of fuel before it crashed, but the main focus of the investigation is on a possible electrical failure. In response to the crash, the South American Football Confederation has canceled all activities until further notice. The mayor of Chapeco, home of the ill-fated football club, said he and other officials barely missed boarding the plane that crashed. They instead decided to take a commercial flight. Chapecoense was seen as one of Brazilian football's real Cinderella stories. 2 years after breaking into the country's first division, it defeated Argentina's powerhouse San Lorenzo last week to advance to the two-leg Copa Sudamericana final. Joining us now from Medellin, Colombia, is reporter James Bargent. James, thank you for being with us on the Voice of America. Can you give us any update on the death toll from the plane crash?
Yeah, so what we're hearing at the moment is there was 76 dead and five survivors. One of those people did initially survive and then died in the ambulance on the way to hospital. Of the survivors, there's four of them are players from the team.
Are you getting any details, James, on what happened to the plane, why it crashed?
Yeah, all we know so far is that around 10 o'clock, the plane communicated with air traffic control in the Jose Maria Cordova airport, which is just outside Medellin, and they reported that they're having electrical faults in the plane and they requested an early landing. But somewhere between that and actually making it to Medellin, the airplane went down. We don't know exactly what happened at the moment. There is some talk of the airplane possibly jettisoning its fuel. This is based on the fact that when it crashed, there was no particular explosion that would suggest that the fuel went up in flames, which could possibly be related to this electrical fault. But that's all the details we have at the moment.
Condolences coming in from all across the footballing world. James, Zinedine Zidane, and others. What's been the reaction there in Colombia?
Yeah, I mean, obviously everyone's in shock here. I mean, the fact that it's a football team doesn't make it any more or less tragic, but it definitely increases the shock factor. I mean, this would have been one of the biggest games of the year for Nacional. So the whole city was really preparing for this game. There was a lot of excitement, a lot of build-up to it. And for it to end like this, people are just in shock, really. It's finding it difficult to process the level of this tragedy.
This Brazilian club has been described as one of the real Cinderella stories in the country. Does that make the tragedy perhaps even more harsh, James?
I mean, certainly from a sporting perspective, this would have been the biggest match in their history. So this is not one of Brazil's main teams to make it this far in the Copa Sudamerica is a major achievement. So to have it end in this fashion, certainly from a sporting perspective, it's one of the great tragedies that football's seen, really.
James Bargent talking with us from Medellin, Colombia. Thank you, James.
Okay, thank you.
From Medellin, let's go to Kampala, the capital of Uganda, where some South Sudanese students are using football to unite young people from various ethnic groups and discuss issues affecting the country. Magumi Davis Wakarinj attended one of the football matches in Kampala, and he filed this report.
Coach Joseph Nashon shouts instructions his Budwe football club players on the field at Kampala St. Lawrence University. The team is squaring off against another group of young men made up of South Sudanese from various parts of the Equatorial region. The pitch is muddy, but Nashon says the players are enjoying the game and putting their troubles aside.
We're here to still show our brothers that we want to be together. Despite the fact that we are in Uganda, we want to live as one people. The fact is there is conflict and insecurity going back in our homes. We can't keep on thinking about it all the time. We want to be also refreshing our mind by playing football.
Nashon, who is a second-year public health student at the Kampala-based African Population Institute, says games like this have the power to break the divide between different South Sudanese ethnic communities who ordinarily would not talk to each other in South Sudan.
Before like the game started, I found there was an interaction. People were crossing over and greeting one another. Oh, I've not seen you for a long time. Meaning there is kind of peace that exists between the two.
Nashon says the young generation must change the mentality of resorting to violence to resolve their differences. St. Lawrence University student Aquila Edward helps organize the soccer games which attract South Sudanese from all over Uganda. Edward, who hails from the Budwe state capital Yambio, says all ethnic tensions are forgotten on the field.
As we are here as footballers, after playing, we have to interact with each other to know, and by doing so, then we shall have unity, and the unity will be taken back home.
George Martin, a computer engineering student at St. Lawrence University, is a player with the Budwe team.
I don't care if it's Nuer, Dinka, or Bari, or any other tribe. So all I care is we need to come up together. We need to join ourselves together in order to have peace, and we play a fair game as we are doing right now. So I think there's no argument, as you can see. There's no argument, there's no quarreling, there's no fight, there's nothing. So we are just playing fair game.
Player Samuel Atere's home is in your state, formerly part of Lake State. Atere captained the team representing non-Equatorial South Sudanese who live in the Equatorial region. By playing on the team, Atere says he has been able to make many new friends.
If we go as here and we meet ourselves in Juba, by the way, it is actually very good. We can remember ourselves that this is so that it is our player we have ever been playing with them, and this one will give us a love for each other.
23-year-old Innocent Birara Emmanuel from Yei is one of several fans watching the game. Emmanuel says, aside from uniting different South Sudanese factions, the games also allow players to hone their skills.
It's just exciting and fantastic for me to watch my own countrymates playing a soccer in a country like this, Uganda. Specifically, I'm seeing some talent here that if put in place in practice, can make a very good team to our country, South Sudan.
The match ended by each team scoring 2 goals. Many of the players here say once they graduate from university, they plan to go home and help fix South Sudan's political problems. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinj in Kampala, Uganda.
I encourage our VOA listeners to check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. The address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOA Sunny. You'll see photos and videos, and you can post your comments. So check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page.
Voice of America!
During Monday's Sunny Side of Sports, reporter Samson Omale had a story on a two-time Olympic champion from Ethiopia offering financial advice to African athletes.
The new president of the Ethiopian Athletics Federation, Haile Gebrselassie, has advised African athletes to be disciplined so that they can invest in ventures that will provide them with income long after their careers on the track are over. Over the years, Gebrselassie has used his winnings to grow a business empire, something he believes is possible for all athletes.
Let them keep, you know, one important thing. When they get that money, they have to know the money is faster than them. It finishes very quickly. Even sometimes, the money what you get, it spoils you. It's not only to finish, you know, it spoils you. Once you get the money, you go and just you start to adapt, you know, a different life.
Do you have a different life in your new role as president of the Ethiopian Athletics Federation? That's the question the energetic Andy Edwards asked Haile Gebrselassie earlier this month in Athens, Greece.
Yes, it is. Now, big responsibility, I'm telling you. Now, every result in what you see, who's behind, of course, Haile. The good result, the bad result, no matter what, now everybody will now start to say something. If it's a good, they talk about, you know, just, that's like what he used to do. If the bad result, running and leading, it's not similar. It's not the same. That's what they're going to say. But I myself, I really, you know, just want to put all my effort in Ethiopian athletics. I believe, you know, just can do something. That's what I started. Otherwise, you know, just it's not necessary to become a president or to do something around athletics. But I need some time. Sometimes means, you know, in the next 2-3 years.
Of course, we're talking now in Athens where you're going to receive the Ames Lifetime Achievement Award. We all know about your achievements. But in terms of, are you thinking of restructuring Ethiopian athletics? Of course, you still have great runners, Kenenisa Bekele, of course, and quite a few very good female marathon runners. But the success has not been consistent in recent years. Are there a couple of main points that you see need to be improved in Ethiopia's athletics?
Yes, I have to. Restructuring is really important. You know, just I keep, you know, just something which one is important for the athlete and which is not important for the, first, you know, I have to check which one is good, which one is bad. After that, you know, of course, I have to restructure. You know, it's not only the athlete themselves. Rule. I have to check again and again. And already, you know, just I found, you know, some of the things, you know, which one it's not good for the athlete. It's not good for the result. At the end of the day, you know, what we need, you know, just to win.
Does that also include what I might say as an outsider, a more consistent selection policy, because there's been a lot of controversy in recent years about who was going to the Olympics, who wasn't, leaving out Kenenisa Bekele from the marathon for Rio this year. What's your view?
Exactly. One of, you know, the issue, as you said, you know, just this election process. I mean, like the selection of the athlete, it was not the things what you need, because, you know, the people who was doing, you know, this thing, they didn't know about, you know, this process, and that's why we paid price. Rio was really bad, not only because of, you know, the performance of the athlete, including, you know, just the things what they've done, you know, before they went to Rio, and that's also one of the things I have to restructure.
Let's finish on a lighter note. We're in Athens. You're going to receive this Ames Award for Lifetime Achievement. Of course, couple of days after the award ceremony, there'll be the Athens Marathon. And people already have been asking you, what do you think of this? Is the classic marathon course, the legend of Pheidippides? Will Haile Gebrselassie ever run this marathon? Because you still look very fit. You clearly look like a runner. Maybe you'll always look like a runner. What about that? Are you going to be on the start line one day in the town of Marathon?
I wish, you know, to run this marathon. At least, you know, just to, I mean, to be at the start line and just to see the atmosphere. And, you know, to run, you know, just a marathon. Of course, I don't promise you, not just as a competitor, but as I mean, a fun runner. You never know. We'll see.
Well, I think we'll see that the race of life in terms of you, Haile Gebrselassie, as president of Ethiopian Athletics and a power in world athletics, will continue. Thank you, Haile, very much.
Thank you. Hello, this is Haile Gebrselassie. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sport on the Voice of America.
Voice of America! I had the voice of America calling on my wavelength. Man was coming out of Frankfurt and Maine. I had the voice of America calling on my wavelength. Singing, come back.
Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Some sad news out of Colombia, as you well know, Andrew. Any trending news on that plane crash?
Absolutely. It's a top trending topic around the world. Lots of people talking about it. That Chapecoense team that unfortunately so many of them lost their lives. And we're seeing a lot of tributes from the sports world, particularly from the soccer world. Manchester United tweeting out saying the thoughts of everyone at Manchester United are with Chapecoense Real and all those affected by the tragedy in Colombia. Bayern Munich tweeting out saying that their thoughts go out to everyone there and those affected by the tragedy. A lot of soccer players, soccer clubs reaching out in the wake of this tragedy. We're also seeing a lot of other folks from the sports world. I saw Rafael Nadal, big football fan, tweeting out, offering his condolences to the players and their families, all the victims of the plane crash. And even the Chapecoense Real Twitter account, they tweeted out just a couple hours ago. They had a video of the team after their last big win. They said, "This is the last video of our warriors." So moving social media that we're seeing in tributes from across the world.
Andrew, you mentioned Manchester United. Before the show, I received a list of tragic, fatal plane crashes involving other sports teams. Man U involved in one way back in 1958, eight members of the team killed in a crash in Munich. And just to mention a few of the more recent ones, Zambia's national football team, nicknamed the Chipolopolo, they lost 18 players and five team officials in a fatal plane crash on April 28, 1993. Another football team back in the 40s, the Italian football club Turin. So these tragedies, they pop up every now and then, but it doesn't make it any easier to deal with.
No, it doesn't at all. And you mentioned those crashes, and a lot of people comparing the Turin crash, the Man U crash, the Zambia crash, and now this one, and kind of stringing those together as major football-related air accidents. One person noted that those teams in the years subsequent to that actually were able to come back and win championships, so that they, you know, the resilience that they've shown, they're hoping and praying that Chepequinse will show that resilience going forward. This other thing, too, is a lot of people hadn't heard of this team outside of South America, but this was really a Cinderella story. We talk about that term a lot on the show, a team that's not expected to do well. They were doing so well going into that final match in the South American Cup of Nations, I believe it was. Not expected to play well, kind of came out of nowhere, and were just brought so much joy to that community in Brazil. I saw one comment from, I believe it was the mayor, saying that this was such a joy for us. This was our joy. Everybody was really behind them. And we talk about this a lot in U.S. sports. You know, we had the Chicago Cubs after 108 years winning the World Series. Even the Cleveland Indians going to the World Series after, you know, trying to win after 68 years. So that connects with a lot of folks we're seeing on social media, even if they haven't heard of this team. That really connects with them, the idea that this was a Cinderella story, that this could have been any team in the world whose fans are just so excited to see them play and see them succeed. And so tragically, it didn't happen for them.
Andrew, some of my Facebook friends are checking in with their thoughts and condolences in the wake of this Chapecoense tragedy in Colombia. And you can check out my Facebook page at facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Robin Toby writes, "So very sad for them, the players, and their families. Sports are such a happy and healthy event that can bring so many people and countries together." And that reminds me, Andrew, this is not just a Colombia story or a Brazil story. The South American Football Confederation has canceled all soccer activities after this terrible plane crash. So it goes across the board, in other words, in terms of the impact on the society.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's any sports fan around the world, like I said, will have an impact with this. They will feel an impact from this because it could have been any team. And that's why we're seeing such strong reaction from around the world. Sports is one of those things that really does unify the globe. Doesn't matter what language, what country, especially a sport like football, which is played around the world. You know, the World Cup captures global attention every 4 years, and there's a reason for that. It's because so many countries have these teams and have such fans of the sport. So for it to be this sport as well, I think that resonates with a lot of people.
Couple more Facebook comments. Latif Kehinde writes, "My condolences for those involved in the Chapecoense plane crash. A hard time for football," writes Latif. "Great support and strength." John Udo writes, "This is really heartbreaking. God knows why." Joshua Zenit, longtime Sunny Side of Sports listener. "Not so sunny news to hear for sure, Joshua." And Joel Kenny writes, "May God grant them peace to all the victims in Colombia." What else is trending out there, Andrew?
Well, in addition to the reactions, we're starting to see some photos and really haunting photos is the only way you can describe it, of the team. There's one photo circulating on social media, which is allegedly the last photo that the team took right before they boarded that plane, taking a group photo on the tarmac. And then there's another photo that's making the rounds that is capturing a lot of attention. There were several members of the team that didn't travel with the team, and they're sitting despondent in the locker room, which is their heads in their hands, and they can't believe that their teammates have died. These images, you know, we always say a picture's worth 1,000 words. It's worth more than even, you know, the 140 characters you get in a tweet. Just these photos being sent out on Twitter or put up on Facebook are speaking volumes about the tragedy of the situation. So all the sadness being expressed. But again, we go back to those comparisons to those other teams as hope that they will move forward from this. And I did see one tweet just now that even some Brazilian clubs are offering some of their players. They said, "We're going to trade some of our players if you want them so you can rebuild your team." So already a great gesture from some Brazilian teams trying to help them rebuild in the midst of this awful, awful situation.
Andrew Palcheski, the VOA's social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you very much.
And that wraps up the November 29th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer John Dryden. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In many conflicts worldwide, human trafficking or modern slavery is often among the most tragic consequences. And despite persistent efforts to eradicate trafficking in persons, this abhorrent crime persists. According to the International Labor Organization, over 20 million people worldwide are victims of forced labor. On September 16th, U.S. Permanent Representative to the United Nations and December President of the Security Council, Samantha Power, stated that for groups like ISIL and Boko Haram, slavery has become one of their most versatile weapons of war, used to instill fear, to inflict suffering, to recruit followers, reward fighters, convert people of other faiths, reward combatants, and generate revenue. In Iraq and Syria, ISIL distributes women and girls to fighters as spoils of war, systematically rapes them, and sells them in markets like cattle. ISIL has even gone so far as to encourage the sexual assault of prepubescent girls and issue guidelines on how to treat the women and girls who have been enslaved. Boko Haram also exacts horrors upon those whom it has kidnapped and enslaved. On October 2nd, the group reportedly forced four girls and a boy to become suicide bombers in the Nigerian city of Maiduguri, where they self-detonated at a mosque during evening prayers. 15 people, including these kids, were killed, and more than 35 were injured. Witnesses estimated that the bombers were as young as 9 years old. Member states must commit to ending the conflicts that enable human traffickers to operate, as well as support trafficking victims. To address this in Iraq and Syria, where ISIL has enshrined systems of human trafficking and sexual violence, the U.S.-led 65-member coalition remains determined to destroy ISIL, stem the flow of foreign terrorist fighters, and restrict its funding streams used to fuel its reign of terror. The U.S. also continues to provide security and counterterrorism assistance to the governments of Chad, Nigeria, Niger, Cameroon, and Benin to aid their fight against Boko Haram. Human trafficking in conflict is a scourge that knows no borders. That's why U.N. member states must individually combat human trafficking and coordinate efforts now to put a stop to this human tragedy.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth look at President Barack Obama's legacy in Africa and the U.S. Join guest host Esther Gidui Ewart and her panel of guests as they take a close look at President Obama's legacy in Africa and the United States. That's right here on Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.